time for Flames Unfiltered, your spot for Calgary Flames hockey talk.
Flames fans, it's time to finally drop the puck on their regular season. And have expectations ever been this high in Calgary? Good evening and welcome to Flames Unfiltered. Host of the show, me, Brad Brood, and Kyle Lewis. He's with us. Kyle, good to have you with us.
Always a pleasure. Finally, preseason is done.
Done. It seemed like the longest preseason ever.
Of course, especially when expectations are high surrounding the team, right? Because you're chomping at the bit more than ever to get going.
God, it just seemed like it's never going to end. And oh, well, we are done. We are recording this on Wednesday night, which we usually record on Wednesday nights. The eve of the home opener, and a home opener that's going to be a battle. It's going to be, I don't know, this is a tough schedule to start off, but we start with the Colorado Avalanche tomorrow night. And I'm excited. We get them on the second night of a back-to-back. You can't ask for better there, so that's good. But can you ever remember an expectations being as high as they are going into a season as they are this year?
I don't think so. Usually the team would get hot middle of the season, you know, like 18, 19, those years where they finished quite strongly. I would say this is the most hype ever surrounding the team.
I think it is too. I thought way back, because I started following the Flames in 86.
Yeah.
And I was young, so like you don't really know what's going on until you know later on. But I don't remember the expectations. Maybe they were in like 89. I don't know. But I just since like the early 90s where I was really cognitive of what the hell was going on. I don't ever remember him being this high.
Well, very, very different too, right? I mean, with social media now, of course, a lot more teams.
So much more access.
There's so much more pomp and circumstance surrounding expectations of the team. So you factor that in. I don't think it's really debatable that this is the highest expectations they've ever had.
We have a ton to talk about on the show tonight.
We do.
Ton. Wranglers jersey was announced. What's your thoughts on the Calgary Wranglers jerseys?
If anybody's watched this on YouTube and you see my face, you can kind of tell, it's all right. I like the color scheme. I don't love the logo.
I'm not a huge fan of the logo. I think they could have done better with the logo.
It's just kind of plain, you know?
Yeah.
But not in that, like, really accessible way. Yeah. No, not at all. No.
I kind of like the striping, though. It's really 80s striping.
Oh, yeah, fantastic. Yeah,
it reminds me of the old Flyers jerseys or like the old Brandon, I don't know if you are familiar with the old Brandon Wheat Kings jerseys were like that striping. And I don't know, that kind of brings me back to some good memories and stuff. So I like the striping and obviously like the colors. I mean, the colors are the Flames colors.
They're beautiful, of course. Retro colors, yeah, gotta love it.
And then we found out this week that Blasty is going to be back for 12 games this year and I see you're sporting the Blasty, and just to probably get me riled.
There's two reasons for this Blasty. One, yes, correct, to get you riled. Three reasons, actually. Two, because it is back, and I thought it was appropriate. But most importantly to me, this is actually Michael Stone's only game-worn Blasty jersey to date. So he wore it for one game against Toronto. It's obviously the reverse retro. I'm very, very happy that Michael Stone finally got a contract, so that is the other reason we're doing this.
True.
We talked about this via text or on the phone the other day. Like, you heard that interview, right?
Yeah, we talked on we were talking on the phone this morning. I might buy a Stone jersey this year.
I said this on Twitter, and a few people liked it, and I thought it was kind of funny, but Michael Stone not going anywhere else and waiting for the Flames to sign him is like how I was with like an ex-girlfriend of mine. She knew she could always call. She knew it'd always be there. Didn't matter the time of day I was there for. And I think the Flames, that's how they are with Michael Stone. He's not going to go anywhere. He's loyal. We don't have to pay him much attention or much money. He could be seventh, you know. No, anyway. And he was, when he talked to the media, I was like, man, this guy's so likable. Like,
he didn't even pull any punches about it. And that's one of the things that makes him so likable is that he's completely honest.
Yeah, he's unbelievably so. And this is a guy that everybody, myself included, kind of hated on because they paid a bit of a premium to get him at that trade deadline back in 17, I think it was. And, he was because he's got a hard shot, and prior to his knee injury, like he was a little faster too. But he's just so damn reliable. He's one of the. It's so funny to think now that Gaudreau's gone, Kachuk's gone, Monahan's gone. He's one of the only constants of the last few years of this team, and he just doesn't go away. And when he's in the lineup, he does exciting things. He scores goals. Like it's fun.
Yeah.
So welcome back, Michael Stone.
Yes, we're both happy to have you. I'm sure you're.
Everybody should be.
Today on the show, we're going to quickly recap the two preseason games versus Winnipeg. And when I say quick, I mean damn quick. And then we'll roll into some Flames news, signings, waivers, PTOs, captains. Geez, we got a list to discuss. And we'll talk about concerns we have going into the year, opening lineups. And we'll wrap with a preview of the battle at home tomorrow night against the Colorado Avalanche. And, of course, Saturday's Battle of Alberta against those pesky Oilers. And then the Golden Knights come to town early next week, which I thought they looked good last night. And, I don't know, jam-packed issue. It's going to be a good one of Flames Unfiltered. All right, Kyle, as we mentioned, preseason's in the books, and it ended not good. It ended with a 5-0 loss to Winnipeg and a 5-3 loss to Winnipeg. Did you make much of those losses, or do they bother you at all, I guess?
No, not really. It's funny, when you were describing it just now, I thought of that scene in The Simpsons where, you know, the guy gets beat and the kid starts crying and stop, he's already dead. That's how those two games against Winnipeg felt like.
I didn't get too worried about it.
Not at all. I mean, it's just guys getting their reps in, a little bit of influence in your final cuts. I mean, by that point, even, you know, those two games, we kind of knew the direction the team was going in terms of who was going to make the team. So I hardly paid attention to them.
I watched all of Friday night's game, and I guess I got a little bit frustrated at a couple things. I thought we'd bounce back better after losing 5-0, but all in all, I mean, shoot, you take it with a grain of salt. I was happy to see Toffoli get a goal and Coleman and Kadri and some key guys.
That Huberto play too along the boards, like that. I talked to a guy that used to coach him, actually a good buddy of mine, and he had said people in the West don't know how good he is, and that play they actually called the Huberto when he was in junior, like, because he could just do ridiculous things off the boards and advance the puck really quick. So, we're going to see a lot of cool plays like that this year from what I'm being told and what little I've seen so far.
I watched that like 3 or 4 times just because I was like, so,
I think we all did.
Wow. Like, that was a very, very impressive and very impressive play.
Big time.
Let's roll into some Flames news and let's get going right away with the Mackenzie Weegar signing and a lot of us thought it probably would happen, and we all hoped it would happen. It does happen. 8 years, $8.25 million, a full no move clause for the first 4 years. And
you say $8.25 million?
Sorry, $6.25 million.
I was gonna say, yeah.
It wouldn't have been the value we thought then, right?
No, but you know what? I mean, if anybody actually paid attention to how good he really is, that number wouldn't be unthinkable. Look at what Darnell Nurse is getting paid, right?
Every time I look at Darnell Nurse's contract, I giggle a little bit because it's bad. It's really bad.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I was thinking about it too. You know, you look at his contract, and then you compare it to Oliver Ekman-Larsson in Vancouver, and how good does Uyghurs look?
Yeah.
You know, it's crazy. I thought this was a good signing. Full no move clause for the first 4 years. The last 4 years, he gets 10 teams he can't be moved to. I didn't think that was that bad. I know a lot of people said, well, this isn't going to age well. Do you know many contracts that are 8 years that do age well? I can only think of one. That was Ovechkin, and I don't think that was an eight-year contract that he just re-signed off of, but it was a long contract, but very rarely. Well,
it also depends on what you mean by age well. The weaker deals, I think it's very good. It's not an insane number. I mean, look what Lucic is being paid right now. I mean, it's for a guy that good. And he's, like I said the last time we talked, he's going to age quite well based on how he plays. So I think it's a great contract.
What's 6.25 8 years from now on the cap?
Well, that's just it. But you got to think, too, like the way that it's structured, and you mentioned the 10 teams you can be traded to once the modified no move kicks in. You know, Calgary will be exiting their competitive window at that time, presumably.
We've argued about this.
Yeah, and we will again, you know, in the weeks and months and years to come, I'm sure. But it's still, I think he's going to age similar to Giordano, and he's going to be a sought-after asset. Doesn't mean you're going to flip him for a high draft pick or first-round pick or whatever, but he's going to have some value, and somebody at some deadline in the future is going to want him.
For sure. I loved this contract when I saw it. When I saw six, I was like, I actually thought it would be 6.5, and I look at it, this is a hell of a deal. I mean, I know that's what's close to 6.5, but I mean, I don't know. Could you ask for? I have high expectations for Uyghur, and I think he's going to be. I mean, I look at what the depth he brings to this defensive core, and we're right up there on paper with the top in the league.
He's going to be the best defenseman on the team. I don't think there's any question about it. And
I don't know. I think I don't even like Tanev is good.
Oh, Tanev's fantastic. I think all around though, point totals, everything. I'm going to give it to Uyghur.
Yeah, Tanev's not going to put up a ton of points.
Yeah, but Uyghur, I guess the question to just kind of cap that is, what's the argument that it's not a good deal? Because anything I've heard has not been particularly strong.
You've heard that you believe that a lot of people don't like this contract?
No, those that do, and I mean, that don't like it, I should say, those are typically, you know, Oilers fans of other teams who question it. The arguments are very weak. Well, the term's a little long, or, you know, he's overrated. Well, if you look at any metric by which hockey, you know, performance is measured, he's not overrated at all. He's criminally underrated.
I think the people that are knocking this contract would knock every contract. I think there's people that are just going to bitch no matter what. Unfortunately, you see now on Twitter.
Oh, 100%. But like I said, a lot of times, like, oh, I hadn't thought of it that way. That's an interesting argument. Haven't seen a single one that entertains me to say that it's not a good deal.
I worry more about the Kadri one than I do the Huberdeau or the Uyghur one.
As you should. Absolutely. I think we're all in the same boat that way. We're so excited about the upcoming season and all the potential and the figures beyond it. But if you are looking longer term of all the deals they've signed, that is the worst of the three. And I could be wrong on that, but or you could as well, but I doubt it.
Well, we'll see. Time will tell. I mean, time will tell. And I don't know. I like where we're at right now. And to solidify, and we talked about it a little bit in the intro, Michael Stone signs a one-year deal, $750,000, two-way contract. And, one thing I wanted to touch on this is a lot of people were complaining saying the Flames took advantage of him. I look at this two ways. Is he worth more than $750,000? Absolutely he is.
No question.
But it's the situation and the circumstances that he's in. And all in all, he's been completely honest about it. And quite honestly, if he'd have said, well, no, I'm thinking about three other teams, the Flames would have still offered him the same contract.
Yep.
And he wants to be in Calgary. So I think this is a win-win for everybody. And I think it's just the one break that this organization has gotten where somebody wants to be here no matter what.
Yeah, literally, no matter what. I think I've mentioned this once on the show before, just briefly, and for those who don't remember, Roman Turek restructured his contract to remain a Calgary Flame in the 2003-04 season. You know, he's being made a lot of money, like number one goaltender money, $4 or $5 million at the time. You know, this is 20 years ago now, but he wanted to stay with the team. This obviously isn't as drastic. You know, Stone was a free agent, but he's committed to the team. And I don't think we see enough of that in this day and age. And that's to say nothing to anybody who left in the summer or any other circumstance. It's just, it's always about the money and the term. With the playoffs Stone had last year, somebody probably did offer him more money or maybe a two-year contract. But
it didn't sound like it in his interview, but I agree. I know there had to be somebody.
A buddy somewhere texted him, you know, said, hey, would you consider, that's just
hockey life, right? Too small.
You know, you and I, I'm sure, have both been offered jobs from somebody that we knew, like somewhere else or whatever, right? So I just think at the end of the day, you could say to take advantage of him. Yeah, there's definitely an argument for that, but it's refreshing to see a guy that just really wanted to stay with the team. And like we talked about, like the interview was really cool to see somebody talk so positively about the team and the city.
It is. This guy's heart is exactly where we dream of players' hearts being.
Yeah, 100%.
He loves the community, he loves this team, and he believes in this team. And could we ask for anything more? I mean, I love that he re-signed. I was waiting for it. Somewhere in my gut tells me that there has been discussions of, hey, when this is all done and these one-year deals are done and you call it a day, we're probably going to have a position for you here.
Well, I think that's a pretty safe bet. Yeah. Certainly right? Seems that way. Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like that has been part of this game too. We also found out right on the heels of the Uyghur signing, we find out that Sutter has signed a 2-year deal, so it'll be this year plus 2 after that. And Daryl Sutter, if he wins against the Colorado Avalanche in the opener, he'll be the 11th coach in history to get to 700 games, and everything he's touched since he got back to Calgary has just been golden.
Yeah, it's been fun. I vividly recall the night that Calgary beat Ottawa, Jeff Ward was fired right after, and Brad Treliving saying this team needs Daryl Sutter. Man, was he ever right about that.
Oh, and yeah. It's, man, if you look at how much this team has come since that night, after I believe a 7-1 win over Ottawa.
Yeah, it was 7-something. It was a thumping, whatever it was.
I was laying in bed listening to the post-game show, and my phone just started buzzing like crazy. I'm like, what in the heck? And I'm listening, and then Pat Steinberg announced that Daryl Sutter was stepping in, and I'm like, holy cow. I was out of bed, wide awake after that. So
yeah, that was me the night of the Huberto trade.
I was at a concert that night, and I had a horrible reception. And, oh, geez, yeah, that was a fun night, too. I had a few beverages that night, so I was really liking that.
Of course.
Yusuf Alamaki put on waivers, which we both expected, and did not clear. I actually thought he would clear just because of his cap hit. He was claimed by the Arizona Coyotes, which makes sense. I know you have some strong thoughts on this, Kyle, and I'm dying to hear them.
Well, I was one of the people who didn't think he would get claimed, first of all, so I was dead wrong about that. Let's get back.
I didn't either.
For the reasons that you said. This whole thing about, like, you know, first-round draft pedigree, which I get. I'm always going to have a, you know, big year in Arizona or be a big piece there. Like, yeah, maybe. Like, it's possible. I mean, he had major, major injuries, but I noticed he's going to be wearing number 4 as an Arizona defenseman, so kind of a typical defenseman number. It looks like he's going to be a regular, maybe on their depth chart. But all the things people say Valimaki could do, or the glimpses of what they saw in Calgary prior to his injury, it's all possible, but it was never going to happen in Calgary. It just wasn't going to happen. The number one thing a guy in his position needs is a chance somewhere else. I mean, I'm sure he had some looks in training camp, but, I mean, once you have a depth chart structure the way the Flames is, once you have a coach who isn't, you know, a huge fan of you for whatever reason, you know, it's time to try something new. And I'm super happy he got an opportunity somewhere else, and I don't think it was ever, ever going to pan out in Calgary.
I had super high hopes for him, and honestly,
I did too.
Coming out of his stint in Finland, I thought he was going to be a Rookie of the Year candidate, and I wanted that more than anything.
But yeah, he was like a point per game, and I remember when in the Finnish league that year, like before he came back over,
and some dynamic plays too, great stuff. And I was so excited to see how he was going to progress and stuff, and I wanted him to be part of this future. But the more I watched him, and the more I things happened, the more I realized that, like, sometimes hopes and prayers don't outweigh liabilities.
Yeah, well said. I just think it's one of those things where the fan base is, because they had such high hopes, and they had every reason to. You know, I talked about a play he made that led to a goal with a big hit a couple of years ago. Like, it just didn't work out, you know? And there's no, and if he is successful and turns into a 40, 50 point 2A defenseman in Arizona, whatever he does, good for him. It was never going to happen in Calgary. Now, because he didn't pan out, because of Shillington's situation, Connor Mackey gets a look. Maybe Connor Mackey would have been the one that got away, you know, if Alamaki showed better, if Shillington was in camp. I mean, somebody else gets an opportunity when somebody else leaves, and I think it's good for the organization. It's good for Valimaki personally.
I'm going to comment one more thing about, you know, you brought up the persona of him being a first-round draft pick and how that's used as a judging meter on how somebody's doing.
If it was a regular job, that is like one of the bullet points on your resume, former first-round draft choice.
Yeah. And I hate to say this, Kyle, but that's a Canadian thing.
You think?
That doesn't happen in American markets. It doesn't. Because you know what? Most fans, and I'm not saying that Americans are stupid hockey fans, they don't remember or know.
Yeah.
Or much less care.
Yeah.
It's a Canadian thing. You look at the teams in Canada and the markets in Canada that are freaking out because their first rounders didn't pan out, or they're telling us how wonderful he is because he is a first rounder. Yep. They're Canadian markets. It's a Canadian thing. And
that makes sense to me.
It sucks that Valimaki didn't work out. And I hope he does good in Arizona. I do. I don't. And I had people this week saying to me, well, shame on the Flames for losing him on waivers. What do you want us to do? Keep him when he's not one of our best guys and lose Mackey and lose Stone? I mean, are we supposed to not field the best roster? Is that what we're supposed to do just because he's a first rounder?
Yeah. Yeah, it's, I understand people being upset about it, but yeah, it's time to move on. But you know, and the flip side of that is too, for all the pomp and circumstance about a former first round pick, which warranted, yeah, you know, highly touted, get it. I was super excited about him too, as I said. What about all the guys that you had no expectations for that are late round picks?
Fourth and fifth round
picks. Well, that's what I mean. You know, we say, oh, like we're so quick to say, oh, a guy's a diamond in the rough, which yeah, in a lot of cases, absolutely. Or you just weren't paying much attention to the development and they got better and better and you just didn't know. But if this, and then on the other hand, it's like, oh, he's a first round bust. It's like hockey is a very, you know, there's so many different players, so many different developmental leagues, different coaches. I mean, there's late bloomers, there's guys that are ready, NHL ready at 18, guys aren't ready until 25 or maybe even 30, or you know, like Derek Ryan, like 28 or whatever he was. Like, I just don't get the point of being so judgy about it, you know?
I'm with you.
I mean, it's a good analytical tool to say this guy was highly touted or whatever, this guy flew under the radar, but it's just like, man, get the hell over it, you know?
Yeah. You know, one thing that I will admit about myself is that I don't follow prospects as much as I should. And this year, I bought the CHL package and I'm buying the AHL package because I'm watching more games. I'm gonna follow some of the Flames prospects, so I feel like I know a little bit more in that category.
And you're gonna be like me next year. You're gonna be so mad because some player you fell in love with on the Wranglers got cut in training camp, and I can't wait for that.
you watch. But I'm gonna. That's one of the things I wrote down this year, like things I gotta do, and that was one of them.
Well, even you know what, like any local teams too, like the Moncton Wildcats here. Jake Capelci was our captain, you know. And I freaked out the night that the Flames drafted him. It was super fun. I mean, there's connections or scouts all over North America, all over Europe. I mean, the more hockey you can take in, the better it is, right?
Yeah, and it's fun to get something to know. I mean, like, I had that same situation that you had with Blake Lizotte, who's a center for the LA Kings now. And I got to know him really, really good when he played junior hockey here in town. And, you know, it's fun to see those stories.
Yeah, for sure.
Waivers. That's Zahorna and Gilbert were put on waivers. They cleared. Milosh cleared today. I kind of expected that. Did you worry a little bit about Milosh clearing?
A little bit. Too. Yeah. Somebody commented on Twitter. I think it was today. I can't recall who it was, but about Milosh being likely paired with Jeremy Poirier, former St. John Sea Dog, recent World Cup champion.
He's on waivers right now today.
Yeah. So, but he, yeah, there's like, he's extremely talented offensively as a defenseman. He needs a partner like Milosh to kind of back him up, you know, like a savvy pro. So I was a little worried it might get claimed because that's the kind of guy that you want as a seventh defenseman that can go up and down to the bus, you know, whatever the case may be between the AHL and the NHL. Yeah, really glad to see that he went through. Because if you look at the last few years, like with the Stockton Heat, they always had a few of those veteran defensemen around the young defensemen, and that's how they developed.
I think that's good. I think that's really, really good.
Especially for a guy like Poirier, who has tons of potential, but really needs a rock partner to develop his defensive side of his game.
Yeah, good skater, can really wheel and move the puck, but yeah, it'll be interesting to see how he progresses. And I know actually Daryl Sutter was pretty high on him because he mentioned him a couple times.
Which is really cool. That's a huge shot in the arm for that kid.
It is, because Sutter does not comment. we all know that.
Yeah.
PTO releases Eakin Milano, both history, and to my knowledge, have not signed anywhere else. I did hear Eakin was going overseas. Nothing on Milano. Does this surprise you at all?
Eakin, well, they both kind of do, because Eakin, to me, like, he's one of those veteran, gritty centers that would have fit in pretty well anywhere as a extra forward or whatever the case may have been. But Milano, I did a little bit more digging on him, talked to some people who've been around him in different organizations. I think the work ethic, attitude discussion, there is some merit there, and I won't say any more than that because I don't know the guy personally. That's just not fair. But he didn't earn a spot.
He didn't.
Yeah. He just didn't earn a spot, and it sucks because he has great offensive skills, good hockey player. He in theory should have, you know, slotted in on probably the second line, but it didn't work. I suspect probably get a chance somewhere else. Yeah, I mean, all summer, you know, we want Rodriguez or Milano, like one of those two would just be awesome. Well, you got one of them, and he just wasn't good enough.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I was thinking about it today, what we're talking about in 2 months, about what players we think the Flames need to go get before deadline.
Yeah.
That's going to be some interesting conversations we're going to be having. One last thing, and then we'll roll on into some concerns we have for the team. But Daryl Sutter did squash the captains yesterday, which I know sent the fan base into disarray. I don't know. Everybody wants a captain so bad. I don't even care. I think I'm different than everybody on this one. I don't know why, but Michael Backlund and Tanev sound like they're going to be co-captains. Is that kind of what the word is? I don't know.
They're rolling with three or four assistants is what was said, I guess. So that will be Backlund and Tanev for sure. Definitely Huberto and Lindholm.
Audrey had the A on.
Yeah. Yeah. I think Lindholm at this point should be wearing a letter, in my opinion. But
So do I.
I'm a fan of having a captain. If I was going to name one, I think it would be Huberto, because mostly, well, the pedigree of the player, how humble of a guy he is, but also just the way, like, he signed his contract, he just jumped into Calgary, going to the football games, his social media, super active, interacting with fans. I'm not upset we didn't name one. I kind of wish we had it, just because after a few years, you know, like, with Evan Geo, you know, move on. It's like, I don't know. It'd be nice to have one again. We will at some point, but I can understand why they didn't bother to name one.
I'm ready to have one, but it's kind of like getting married. It's like, you better make sure it's the right one, because you screw the situation up if you got to pull a C. So,
you know, if we keep up these relationship analogies, I think that our viewership's going to go way up.
We're going to have to have, like, we'll have to have a statement claim about relationship. We're not responsible for any relationship advice, because I honestly don't know that me and you are really too good at any of that kind of advice, but maybe we are.
I am not.
You have my moments. I know I'm not. So let's switch gears and get into some of the concerns that we're going to have this year. All right. There is so much positives going into this year. We're not going to drag people's attitudes down the night before a game, But it is good to talk about some of the concerns that we maybe have going into this season. And I know I have some, and I know you do too. So let's kind of go back and forth on what our thoughts are there.
Yeah. Bottom two lines, definitely some concern there. There's a lot of replacement level NHL grinder types across both those lines. So I'm definitely a little worried about that. So
you know what though, Cam? Don't you think though most NHL teams would love to have our bottom two lines?
Some of it, yeah. Coleman and Backlund, absolutely.
And Lewis. Lewis was my Kevin Rooney last year. When Lewis started the year, I was like, this guy sucks.
Yeah.
And by the time the playoffs came, I was like in love with, I loved the way he played.
And he's got a great name too. He was much better. I feel like he's a little miscast on that third line. I'd rather see him on the fourth. But then, you know, we've got the concerns around, you know, Lucic, and his play, especially in the second half last year.
We can't have Lucic there.
No, and Richie too. Like, you know, so many plays died on Richie's stick. I have a really hard time with him as well. But I'm not going to single any one player anymore than I just have. It's just the bottom two lines. I think there should be a little bit more youth and a little more talent. Not a whole lot more necessarily, but I'm just a little bit concerned with the bottom half of the lineup.
I think we're going to get it. Because you know what I think is going to happen? Before the deadline, we're going to bring in a right winger.
Yeah.
And either Dubé or Toffoli will slide into that Lewis's spot. Lewis will slide into the Richie spot.
Yeah.
That's what I think will happen.
Well, and that actually leads to a great segue to, I guess, my next concern, Brad, is right wing scoring depth. Toffoli didn't look great on the top line, but just preseason training camp, not going to panic over it. This is a prediction today that I liked because I had said I think Mangiapane should be in that spot. But you know, time will tell, but I think they need a scoring winger. I'd prefer them to get one sooner than later, but much like Toffoli last year, they'll probably add one by the deadline by flipping a defenseman, whatever they might need to do to acquire that. But right side scoring depth and scoring depth in general is a little bit of a concern for me as well.
I heard a prediction today. A guy had said in, it was a bold prediction thing, and he had said that Connor Zary is going to fill that right wing spot. And
that'd be cool. That'd be really cool.
By his prediction was by American Thanksgiving that he'd be in that top end right wing slot, probably the number two slot. So we'll see. I got a couple concerns, and my first concern is injuries. And I know I'm not trying to be Debbie Downer here, but we were the least injured team in the league last year. Mm-hmm. We missed one goaltender game. We missed 12 defense. And the only forwards that were injured were Richie, Pitlick, Monahan, and Yarncrock.
That's it.
Okay. That's it.
Wow. I mean, I knew it was fantastic, but to hear those numbers, it really drives it home.
Unreal. Odds are that won't happen again. So how do we manage that?
Well, we already are in a sense, because part of the reason they had so few is because the team is so well conditioned. In my opinion, and, you know, Sutter's talked at length about that. So I think they're, barring any, God forbid, catastrophic-type injuries, freak accidents, what have you, I don't think they're going to be a whole lot more banged up this year, but they will be more banged up. Just a lot of averages alone will dictate that. But in terms of how they manage it, I mean, it all comes down to coaching between Sutter staff and the Wrangler staff. I mean, you got to have guys that are in – so let's say Stockton, they're in Calgary on the AHL squad.
I know, that's going to be so hard this year.
Yeah, but I mean, but that's the other side of it, though, too, is that if guys do get hurt, the guy's in town, you know? He could be on the road, but if he's in town, you know, we talked about this last time, like having the farm team in the same city or even nearby is a huge advantage. So I think it's a matter of both coaching staff is, you know, staff's communicating as I hear they do. So that guys like Connor Zary who do step in for injured players, and even if it's resting a player, because like I said last year about Lucic, like I don't think he should have played all season. If you want to rest somebody, if somebody's a little banged up, and we found out, you know, about all kinds of injuries in the playoffs last year, broken ribs, broken finger, all that kind of thing, like you got to rotate guys in, and I think they're in a good position to do that, and I think that the guys coming up from the Wranglers know what to expect.
Another fear I have is...
Ooh, a concern or a fear? Fear sounds a lot more daunting. Let's go with fear. It's okay. More intense.
No, let me go. I got two more things. This is a concern. My next one's a fear. Okay?
Awesome.
Cohesion. Last year, we had a group that finally gelled. We had lines that stayed the same for long gaps. The first line stayed together from pretty much like the fifth game on, I believe. Yeah. We just had a cohesive group that worked well together, and they knew their roles. And it led to a very successful season, albeit we didn't go as far as we wanted. This was a huge successful season for the Flames. Mm-hmm. This year we brought in, you know, Huberdeau's new, Toffoli hasn't played a ton on the team, you know, for a long time. Kadri's new, Rooney's new, we got, you know, Uyghur's new, we have a lot of new players. How do they mesh together, and how does that work? Does it happen quickly, I guess, or is this something that's going to get drawn out?
I think it should happen fairly quickly. I mean, the guys that want to be there, the guys that had a full training camp together. It could take a few weeks, but I mean...
Is it something you're worried about?
No, because the way the team's coached...
I'm getting the feeling you're not worried about this at all.
No, I'm not. That's why I'm brushing it off.
I want you to calm my nerves then. Fill me in.
I just think with Sutter's coaching staff, like they're very good at identifying the types of players they want on the team. I think he and Brad truly have a great relationship that way. They've identified those players. They brought them in for a reason. And apart from, you know, finding where exactly they might fit, like with what player on what line, I think this is probably the best coaching staff in the league in terms of integrating new players. Now, you could make arguments too, like Cal Yarncroc was not a great fit. I mean, offensively, he did next to nothing when he came over. Still won some draws and wasn't a bad fit. But, I don't know. It's something that doesn't really concern me because I think Sutter has the same expectations across his roster, whether you're a new guy or a guy that's been there for 50 years. Like, he's going to make you play your ass off, and if you're not, you're going to sit, and the next guy will take your place.
I hope you are correct. What other concerns do you have?
The Markstrom situation we talked about last time in terms of how he plays against the Oilers. I mean, as long as the Oilers have McDavid and Draisaitl, they're going to be near the top of the division, I believe, anyway. So him getting his game in top shape when it matters most. So the bigger concern is part of that, I guess, or fear, I'll call it. This is actually fear of mine, is that Sutter's going to ride Markstrom too hard again. I don't think he should be playing over 55 games, and I'm worried that he's going to. And Vladar, who was fantastic last year, and could end up playing tomorrow night because Markstrom was ill this morning, I understood.
Yes.
And if you recall, again, Vladar stood on his head against the Avalanche last year in a 3-2 overtime win. So I want to see Vladar get more starts because he deserves them, and Markstrom, I think, to be even better, needs a bit more rest. So, but I'm a little frightened that that's not going to happen.
I wholeheartedly agree, and it is something I'm worried about too. I couldn't agree more, and honestly, I would not even be upset if Vladar started tomorrow night, would you?
No. I mean, I keep coming back to those. For all the great games Markstrom had last year, the two that Vladar played, one against Toronto, in Toronto, and the one in Colorado against the Avalanche, he was lights out, the best player in each country, you know. The night when he played those games, he was unbelievable. So I have no concerns about him playing tomorrow night. And, you know, if he gets the season off on the right start, if he does get the start, then, you know, good for him. Hopefully he gets a bit more confidence with the coaching staff and plays a bit more often, because I think that's a huge key to this team going deeper.
My big fear. Here's my
big fear. This is what we're waiting for. Lay it on me.
Expectations and how we manage them. Last year, we sat right here and talked about just making the playoffs.
Yeah.
So it's easy when that's all you got to do.
Sure.
This year, if this team gets off to a 2-8 start, what happens in Calgary?
Oh, man.
I hate to say it. The pressure will be like a bomb going off. And it won't be good. Last year?
No. I never thought of that. So that's why I'm kind of oohing and eyeing here. I'm just like, wow, yeah, that would be catastrophic. I think they would stay the course for as long as they possibly can.
I agree. I think they should. Because I do believe this is a good hockey team. I do believe they'll work through any adversity. But I don't think that'll happen.
No.
But I do know if it did happen, it would be a bigger fear and response than 12 months ago if that would have happened. 12 months ago it would have happened, we'd have been like, ooh, maybe this team isn't very good and we're not going to make the playoffs this year. And who knows what would have came with that. But last year we had almost virtually the whole roster have career seasons. That's not happening this year.
No, but a lot of those guys are gone too, right? So
they are.
The team's not going to score as much. I think they're going to allow less goals, though. Not that they allowed many last year. They're going to be third in the league. But if they have a rough start, they're still going to make the playoffs. They're going to have a hot streak start in the middle of the season. They're going to maybe go in as a dark horse. I think they're going to go in as a favorite, which is also a danger. Because the reality is a lot of it has to do with being hot at the right time, you know? If you get a team that's red hot in March, I'd take them and, like, I'd want to play them in the playoffs, right? Because it's hard to sustain that.
I picked Calgary to finish second in the division.
Yeah.
It's because I do think the regular season's going to have some more hurdles this year that we didn't have last year. And sure. I think this team's good enough to fight through them. And I do think we're built more for a playoff run. I really do believe that.
Yep.
And I know some people say that just because they want to hear that, but I do truly believe that. I don't know. I just know it's hard to be the best when you're expected to be the best.
Yeah, because they often, you know, fall flat on their face. So, but you said it very well in that they are built for a deep playoff run. Doesn't mean they're going to do it, but they are built for one. So, in terms of, obviously, we're all hoping that happens, but I don't know. It's really hard to say because there's so many new stars in this team. It's going to see how it plays out. You know, it's still going to be a puck possession team, still be, you know, probably top 10 in special teams, but we'll have a much better idea very quickly, I think, you know, how good of a team this is. And we'll have to kind of see what happens from there. But, like I said, I still have some concerns about how it's all going to play out.
When you look at this roster, and the opening night roster was named on Monday, I believe, and it's changed a little bit with Stone coming in and whatnot. But when you look at this roster and you look at how the lines are set and you look at how the defensive pairings are set, things you like or things you don't like?
Not much I don't like. Like I said, I prefer Mangiapane in that top unit, which I still think is going to happen at some point. And I hope that Ruzicka or somebody would come in to take Richie's spot because I just don't think he's good enough to be in the opening night lineup, in my personal opinion, but
I'd like to see Richie and Lucic be like a tandem pair that, you know, Lucic is in two, Richie's in one, Lucic is in, you know what I mean by that?
So something like, yeah, something, just rotate them a bit because they're just not effective enough to play on a regular basis in my opinion. So outside, I think the D is pretty well set. I'm a little leery of guys playing their offside. You know, I know that Brody did it for a long time in Calgary. Weegar looks like he's going to be playing it alongside Tanev, which is as good a guy as you can play alongside. But I love the defense and I love the goaltending. I think they're fantastic. So there's not really a whole lot else to change.
I love both of them. And I look at the depth chart, you know, and I love the center straight down the middle. I don't think you can get better than Lindholm, Kadri, Backlund, Rooney. I love left wing at Huberdeau, Mangiapane, Coleman, Lucic. But the right side, like, there's questions with Toffoli. There's questions with Dubé. There's, you know, Lewis I feel comfortable with. I question Richie. We need one of those guys to really grab the bull by the horns, whether it's Dubé or Toffoli, and say, no, this is my spot. I can do this. And I know you talked a lot earlier in either last episode or the one before that you think this is a year Dubé does that. Do you still feel that way?
Yeah, especially since Milano didn't pan out. He has everything right in front of him to you know, grab hold of it. Could get some second power play minutes. And again, people, like 18 goals last year, and a lot of them came in the second half. And as I said before, when they have a hot second half, usually that's the coat of primer for the breakout season. So 40, 50 points, I think, is a reasonable expectation from him. And if he doesn't do it, if he doesn't perform well, if he doesn't become a regular scoring forward on this team, then that, you know, acquisition of a right wing who can score is way more important. Because right now that's Dubé's role to lose.
Yeah, it is. I still think adding one would be good, whether it be a prospect that comes up or a trade for somebody, because I'd like to see Richie move out of that spot and Lewis maybe play the fourth line role on the right side. And I still think there's a spot in the top three lines. And you know, it'd be ideal if Toffoli worked on the first line. It would be ideal if Dubé worked on the second line, simply because it would bolster our depth, right?
Yep. But if Dubé doesn't, Matthew Phillips deserves a chance. I know he's undersized. So is John Gaudreau. I mean, he's extremely skilled. He's scored at the American league level like year after year. He's on his probably last contract he's going to sign in Calgary because he probably wants an opportunity. Get him in for a few games. See what he can do.
Yeah. I mean, you don't know until you try, right?
Exactly.
But I also feel like this team's going to go out and trade for somebody, you know, whether it be a Timo Meier or who, but you know, it's going to be somebody. I do believe that. Now cap space is going to get tricky. This team's got 1.2 million free right now.
Yeah, maybe 1.3, or we're very close with that number anyway, for sure.
I don't know what's happening with the Shillington situation. It sounds like that money will stay on the cap. And I have not heard any rumblings at all of a return there. So
no. That could change. He could go on LTIR if whatever the situation is, you know, turns out to be longer than we expect.
Yeah. I believe you have to have league approval for that, correct?
Yeah, and depending, you do. And
it has to be a medical reason. It can't be.
Yeah.
I there's just so many variables on that. It's hard to even comment because I don't know what's wrong. You know what I mean?
Nobody does. We don't want to speculate either. But, I mean, there are different avenues by which that could become a source of cap relief. Now, granted, I would sooner have Shillington in the lineup, but I'm very high on Connor Mackey, and I think Stone's proven himself capable, so we'll get through it.
I did see a tweet that if the Flames manage their cap correctly with the players they have right now, it would be like $5.2 million available at deadline. Could be more if Shillington's allowed to be on LTIR. Mm-hmm. That'll be interesting to see how that goes. And, you know, we can speculate all we want that it's going to be a right winger that's sought after, but, you know, injuries are going to happen and who knows, where this is going to all go down. I think you said it the best when you said that, you know, this is in the hands of Dylan Dubé right now to step up and solidify that side.
He's the next in line for a breakout season. There's nobody else on the team that has more variables working in his favor right now than him. So, came to camp in great shape, showed well when he played. So I'm just going to watch it happen. Hopefully starting tomorrow night.
Yeah, I look at this roster and I compare it to previous season's opening night rosters. And I kind of laugh because this roster really, really looks good on paper.
Yep.
Now it's just, can we relate that to regular season success?
We're going to find out very shortly.
We will.
Get all your Flames Unfiltered podcasts, team news, team updates, and highlights at flamesunfiltered.com.
The regular season gets going for the Calgary Flames Thursday night at the Saddle Dome when the Stanley Cup champion Colorado Avalanche come to town. Kyle, do you like starting off your season against defending Cup champs?
After you sign away their best two-way center, absolutely.
Have you seen the Flames' record in the last 10 years?
I don't have to talk about that. It's like the Anaheim curse. Yeah.
We've won one game since 2009.
Yeah, going back, so, I don't know, 20 years, whatever it was, or 20-some years, it was 2 and 20 and 3 or something. Like, it is horrendous.
Is that not crazy to believe that it's that bad?
Well, I mean, it's kind of dumb to – I mean, a lot of those variations of the team were essentially the same year over year, but it's just – a lot of it's just bad luck too. I mean, it's just a season opener. I mean, you always want to start off with a win, but it's quite something, but it's also, they don't want to put too much stock into. I think they're going to play really well tomorrow night. I certainly hope, but yeah, it's a weird one for sure.
Now we follow this one with a game Saturday night in Edmonton, Battle of Alberta. Do you look at that game as being more important than the Colorado game?
I do, because it's the Battle of Alberta and because it's a team that eliminated the Flames in the playoffs. So, yeah. I mean, the Stanley Cup champions are always the best measuring stick in the league. But as far as the Flames in particular are concerned, I mean, it's Saturday night. It's hockey night in Canada. There's some measure of revenge involved, even though it's just a regular season game. And, I think it's more important. What are your thoughts on that?
Saturday night's so much more important. We only get three battles with Edmonton this year.
Yeah.
And we've got to get Markstrom to get over the hump there and get that curse in the garbage. We need to hold Edmonton to three goals or less and get that we have to score six to beat them squashed.
Yep.
I think our three games against Edmonton this year are so important. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. So I just thought of this because you mentioned the three games against Edmonton. This is just a kind of a random aside. As far as the Blasty jersey goes, they're wearing it 12 times this season. Okay, so think about this, and I didn't know this until somebody pointed it out. They're wearing the Blasty jersey against Gaudreau and the Blue Jackets, against Tkachuk and the Panthers, against Giordano and the Leafs, against Monahan and the Habs. So four of those 12 games are against former star players that play for the Flames wearing the Blasty jersey. And I don't know that there would be any reason behind it, maybe because, you know, a lot of interconference play, it's a good time to wear it, but that's strange to me.
That is weird.
Yeah.
I don't know why there would be correlation to that. But to
I don't know why either, but it's just strange.
To me, based off what you're saying, and there would look like there would be a link, though, wouldn't there?
Well, it would seem that way, but yeah.
I don't know. That's really odd.
Yeah.
I'm glad.
I know you have the Blasty date circled in your calendar, so if I'm wrong, you can double check for me.
I swear to God, if we get off to an 0-3 Blasty start, those things need to go right out the window.
Can you imagine if in the playoffs they decide to make it their home jersey instead of the retros? How mad would you be? Would you switch teams? I feel like you might switch teams.
Gosh. I gotta ask. Okay, I got in this conversation with a buddy of mine a couple days ago. How the hell do you switch favorite teams?
Oh, dude. People
do that in sports. And I don't know how you do that. But
I got blocked on Twitter for asking somebody, how the hell do you cheer for two teams in the same sport? I don't get that either.
Cheer for two teams? I can't do that.
No. I get too much money tied up in one.
Do you have a team in the Eastern Conference, though, that I'm not saying you cheer for them, but maybe have a little soft spot for them?
Yeah, the Bruins, because it's my dad's team. And I was a big Ray Bourque fan when I was younger. But I certainly wouldn't call myself a fan, and that's the extent of it. Yourself?
I'm not a fan by any means, but I kind of enjoy the Islanders, and I think what that goes back to, it was the first Stanley Cup wins that I remember watching on TV that I can remember. And I've always kind of felt bad for them because I was on a hockey trip and we had gone through Canada and headed down and we were in New York and we went to an Islanders game and we went to a Devils game and we went to a Rangers game. And just the way the Rangers fans were, it made me feel bad for the Islanders. And I don't know. I mean, not that they're kind of like, I don't know. I just felt like they get crapped on in New York. You know what I mean? And I don't know. I think it's more goes back to the Stanley Cup thing that I remember, but I don't know. But I don't cheer for them at all. Here's a question though. If the Flames, remember 2-3 years ago when the talk was, oh, we're out of here. We're heading to Houston, right?
Yeah.
If they would have moved to Houston, would you have pulled the plug?
I thought a lot about that, and people asked me that at the time, and I really couldn't give much of an answer because I really didn't know. I couldn't imagine that I would switch teams unless they, you know, completely rebranded and all this other stuff. I mean, I have a bit of a soft spot for the Jets because that's a small Canadian market that, you know, deserve to get a hockey team back. I hope the Nordiques are back in Quebec City. It's, you know, someday.
I do too.
Yeah. It's just great for the game. I think I would have stuck with them. What would you have done?
My wife asked me that question back when the talk was going, and I looked her dead in the eye and said, I'm done, man. They moved to Texas. I'm out.
Wow. And you're American, and I'm Canadian. That's wow.
I'm done. I said, I can't cheer for a hockey team in that market. And she asked me, well, what team would you be a fan of? And I said, the Winnipeg Jets. And
nice.
I said it for a couple reasons. Number one, I live about 4 hours from Winnipeg. Number two, it's the most crazy arena to be in for a game that I've been in.
Smallest in the league. It's crazy.
Rocking in there.
Yeah.
And as much as there's some things about Winnipeg I don't like, there's a lot I like about that city.
Yep.
And I thought they got hosed over when they lost the Jets the first time. And when they got them back, they've made the most of it every single damn day, and I love that.
No, it's fantastic. Those are all the reasons why I have a soft spot for them as well.
And I can't believe, I don't know, just think of how much of an investment we both have into the Flames and how much I love the Flames. But if they went to Houston, I was done. I was pissed about that. I can't even believe that was even discussed.
That was stupid.
So those are the Thursday and the Saturday matchup. On Tuesday, the 18th, Vegas comes to town. I always fear that. Vegas finished fourth in the Pacific, out of the playoffs last year. They did beat the Kings last night on a last-minute goal from Stone. And they're a team that we both predicted to be lower in the standings this year because of a lot of different factors. But they're a team I worry about. And that's a team that always plays Calgary tough.
Yeah, big time. That'll be the first part of the schedule for the Flames is pretty tough. It should be pretty telling in terms of where this team is at. So there's no, I mean, not there's any gimmies in the league anymore, but there's certainly none in the Flames schedule.
The positive is that is the first game of an 8-game homestand, which is good, but also means a lot of road games coming up after that. So a weird schedule for the Flames this year where they're at home for long stretches and on the road for long stretches. It'll be interesting. It all starts Thursday night. The Avalanche come to the Saddle Dome, and I can't wait. I can't.
It'll be fun.
Next week, we are back with another episode of Flames Unfiltered. Kyle's going to be on the road. Kyle, where are you going?
I'm off to Ottawa for meetings for a few days. So while I'm there, I'll get a chance to take in the Capitals and Senators next Thursday night. I'll make an appearance with you on Wednesday, one way or the other.
I am going to be flying a little bit solo, but Kyle will be joining us. We'll do a segment as good as we can do in a remote location, and that's just life, and that's going to be really, really good. So join us next week. We're going to have a lot to discuss. 3 games will be in the book. We'll know a little bit more about this team and how it's looking as the season gets going, and 3 very important games to discuss next week. So make sure you check us out. And, get on over to Twitter, too. Look up Kyle on there. Is that VanLewis14? I'm at Brad Brood. Follow us. Get to know us a little bit. And we're back next week. Enjoy the opening of the Stanley Cup, or the race to the Stanley Cup. See you next week, Flames fans.
Adios.
Get connected. Flames Unfiltered can be found on Twitter at Flame Unfiltered. And also make sure you check out our Facebook page at Flames Unfiltered. Check out host Brad Brood on Twitter at Brad Brood. And co-host Kyle Lewis on Twitter at VanLewis14. If you like what you hear, rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. You can find Flames Unfiltered on all the major podcast players. Thanks again and enjoy the hockey action.
Playoffs! Yeah, baby! Playoffs! Yeah, baby!
Thanks for tuning in to Flames Unfiltered. Check back for more action-packed Calgary Flames talk. This episode of Flames Unfiltered was copyrighted and produced by Inside Edge Hockey Media Group.